Back on Downtown, 4:30 on your Wednesday afternoon, and time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here in studio, and happy to welcome back to the program a friend of Downtown, recently on to talk with us about his great book on the Red Sox. We're going to go back in time, though, today and chat about a book from, 2019, is it, Bruce?
Yeah.
And even though the title is The New York Yankees in Popular Culture, I enjoyed it very much because because David was involved as editor, and it made me actually enjoy reading about the Yankees. David, welcome back.
Thank you. How are you today?
Doing great, thank you. Awesome to have you back on with us again. What a wonderful collection this was. What inspired you to gather these essays about the Yankees?
Well, after I had my first book published about the Brooklyn Dodgers, I thought a book about the Yankees would be the most logical avenue. And I wasn't too far along before I decided this might be too big for me and I should really seek some guidance. So my editor said, just make it an anthology. Get other perspectives. Get other people. You don't have to shoulder the load yourself. Get a variety of viewpoints on different topics that you think are interesting. And that's how it was born.
Well, one of the things I think that makes that work, and you point this out at the book, we can talk about all the great dominating sports teams by their sports, but the Yankees start dominating in 1920. There's no NBA then. There's no NHL then. I mean, no NFL then. It's such a long story that it really would be sort of hard for one person to tell it all, and I think you did a fabulous job in figuring out how to structure this book.
Thank you. I really lucked out with the contributors and people educating me every step of the way because they came up with avenues and themes and angles that I didn't even conceive of. So that's the joy of being an editor when you can learn something. Say, gee, I wouldn't have thought of that. I would have gone a different way. But that's what makes baseball, right? If you have 10 people in a room and you ask each one to write an essay about Babe Ruth, each one will come at it from a different viewpoint. No one is any better than the other. It's just, what do you think is the most effective? What's breaking new ground? And like I said, I really got lucky with the contributors that we had. Some, you know, weren't even baseball people. I didn't really need, 15 hardcore baseball historians. I wanted something off the beaten path. So when you have, Janine Basinger, who's the leading film historian, writing about Pride of the Yankees, it doesn't get any better than that.
And that was such a wonderful chapter, too.
My favorite chapter, I think.
Yeah, I could have done that, but I don't have her experience, her wisdom, her contacts, her depth of knowledge regarding the medium of film. I've taken my share of film classes back in the day at the University of Maryland when I was a communications major, but she has done this for a living for decades. So am I going to be arrogant enough to say, well, I'll do that one? No, I want to get somebody who really can educate all of us, somebody who's an expert in the field and who's not really a member of the Society for American Baseball Research, doesn't really travel in our circles. Let's get some crossover going. Let's get some people who you might look at tangentially. Let's bring them into the mix.
Well, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that the way when you look at the run of the Celtics, Bill Russell comes to mind. When you look at the run of the Patriots, Tom Brady comes to mind. When you look at how the Yankees in different decades had these core four, the four really great players in each decade, I had never thought about that. I mean, I've been a Yankees fan since I could breathe. And I never really thought about how, there was Mickey Mantle, then Bobby Mercer, then who was before Mantle was DiMaggio, who was before that. That sense of continuity. And I thought that the essays that focused on those particular periods were really well done.
The core four is one of my favorite essays. The one about Reggie Jackson.
Yeah. Mm.
Reggie coming to New York, being an icon. If Reggie had the same achievements, but after Oakland and Baltimore, he goes to Detroit or Kansas City or even the Angels, would he have been as revered? Would he have achieved that icon status? There's no place like New York. It has the advertising, it has the finance, it has communications, media, et cetera. And I make the case, I made the case that we need somebody to talk about Reggie. And thankfully, my friend Paul Hensler said, well, I'm going to talk about him as an icon, hero versus icon. And that, again, was an eye-opener for me because we went down different themes and different memories of mine that started to emerge. But now looking at it as an adult, not as a child, looking at Reggie as an adult, looking at the late 70s, the marketing aspect of Reggie, the icon status, the personality, seeing how larger than life he really was, that was a real education for me. And it was a pleasure to go back in time and remember that late 70s Yankees team, which I watched religiously on Channel 11. It was Channel 9 for the Mets and Channel 11 for the Yankees.
OR and PIX, never missed them.
Yep. Well, and maybe it's because it's when I came of age and graduated from high school, but I really enjoyed the essay by Lewis Gordon, The Yankees as a Metaphor for the 1970s.
Yeah, the 70s, that's an interesting time for the Yankees because they weren't so great at the beginning, and then they just added players, and of course, Billy Martin came along, and Reggie comes in 77, and they just gelled. There was something about that team, the personalities, the chemistry, the drama, certainly. I mean, every day in the Newark Star-Ledger, the newspaper we got in our house, as an 11-year-old kid, I'm reading about fights in the clubhouse and fights in the dugout, not really understanding what this is all about. No other team does this. And yet at the end of the year, they won.
But those early 70s teams, you almost, even as a Red Sox fan, found myself feeling sorry for a guy like Bobby Mercer, who was going to be the next mantle and was very good, but never lived up to that hype, battled injury, and also had no cast of characters around him.
Celerino Sanchez? Oh, really?
It's impossible to follow a legend. I think there was a lot of pressure on Bobby Mercer to follow Mantle, and he's still a beloved figure among Yankee fans, not just for the playing, but because he was a broadcaster.
Mm.
And when you become a broadcaster, you get a certain amount of affection from the fans. I know some Yankee fans actually embraced Tom Seaver because Seaver used to call Yankee games with Phil Rizzuto.
Yep. Right.
So you get a different sense from that aspect after the career. You get a different sense of the aspect of fan affection when you're done playing. Because Mercer, I think he was solid. He was a good ball player. But again, just totally unfair to keep all of that stuff. And in the TV movie 61, Mickey Mantle references that, or rather the actor playing him, saying how much pressure he was under when they wanted him to be number six to follow Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, and now he'll be number six. And then he slumped, went to the minors, came back, and he was number seven, which he was delighted to be, at least according to the TV movie.
One of the other things that I thought was really interesting, the way the book progresses, is, you know, the Braves were on TV and Turner, and they thought they were America's team, and the Dallas Cowboys thought about being America's team. But if there was ever a team which had the American fascination more than the Yankees in their heyday, I don't know who it was, because as you pointed out, or as there are a number of places are pointed out in the book, Joe DiMaggio becomes bigger than life. Babe Ruth becomes bigger than life. Lou Gehrig becomes the story everybody wants to tell. Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford, Yogi Berra, they become bigger than life only because they're playing in New York, not just because they're good, but because they're playing in New York.
I agree 100%. Not only are they playing in New York, Bruce, but they're playing against the Brooklyn Dodgers in most of those World Series contests.
Yeah.
So you have two teams from New York City. And back in the day, New York City had multiple newspapers, just like a lot of major cities did. And you might be a New York Mirror guy, a New York Post guy, a World Telegram and Sun guy, and you'll get different viewpoints of Mantle or Mays or Duke Snyder, whomever is playing, whoever is in the sports pages that day. Different reporters have different takes, but your point is spot on. And don't forget, what else was going on in New York in the 50s? Television. So frequently, these guys are on What's My Line.
Yeah.
They're on talk shows. That reinforces the image. I make the case in other areas, other books, that the Dodgers were America's team in the 60s because when TV production moved to L.A., it was Leo Durocher recruiting Herman Munster on the Dodgers, or Jethro,
yeah,
on Drysdale singing with other Dodgers with Joey Bishop. So the live television, the genre of game shows in live television, that was a big reinforcement. Yogi Berra, Phil Rizzuto, you mentioned Mantle, he was on. It was just a fantastic time to be a baseball fan.
We're talking with David Krell about his collection, The New York Yankees and Popular Culture. Really fascinating chapter is Yankee Stadium as the People's Cathedral, and the discussions about the racial issues. The Red Sox certainly had their struggles, but so did the Yankees in figuring out not just the role of African-American players, but African-American fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that's lately getting a lot of exploration. Somebody pointed out to me that it's unfair to group Tom Yawkey at one end and Walter O'Malley at the other end, because it wasn't just Tom Yawkey in 1959, right? It wasn't Jackie Robinson in 47, and then everybody integrated, and then you had the Red Sox with Pumpsy Green. You had the Yankees integrating in 55. I think the Tigers integrated in 58. The Phillies in 57. So a lot of teams were slow to integrate. Now, you can make the argument that the Yankees didn't need the black or Latin players too much because they were winning. You know, they won 5 years in a row. 49, 50, 51, 52, 53. Lost in 55. Win in 56. So you can make the argument that they didn't need to go further for talent, and teams like the Red Sox and the Phillies did. But still, for 8 years to have passed in the same city before you get a black player, when the Giants certainly had their share of black players, and so did the Dodgers, and the Yankees kind of dragging their heels, I think it's a shame. And Elston Howard, the first one, I think he's still underrated.
Oh, yeah. He was a great catcher. I have always thought that he gets lost in history, I think in part because he ended up with the Red Sox. I think there were a lot of Yankee people who thought, well, he's one of those guys we got rid of. But when I remember as a kid watching Elston Howard play, he always seemed to me to be the perfect kind of catcher for a team that was laden with stars. Solid, called a good game, threw runners out, just was a better all-around player than he ever got credit for.
I agree. And one of the things that the Yankees did really well is they embraced their history. So even though players or coaches went on to other teams like Yogi or Billy Martin, when they came back to the Yankees, as a kid, I had a real sense of continuity with history. Elston Howard coming back. Yeah, I knew he went to the Red Sox and I read some stuff about that. But I also knew that this was a guy who played with Mantle and Maris. He played in the early 60s and late 50s. And there's something very cool about continuity, about going to the past. When Phil Rizzuto can talk to these guys, and Phil Rizzuto on the broadcast can mention DiMaggio and mention the other players that he played with, I think there's something really romantic about baseball in that sense, like Brad Pitt says in the movie Moneyball, who says you can't be romantic about baseball. There's something cool when I know it's a game, but it's also a business, and I know there, you know, teams change and players all the time. But when Billy Martin was with the Yankees, we knew as kids it was something special because he had played on those 1950s teams, and he loved being a Yankee.
Well, it's also interesting that the whole concept of the old-timers game came up in the 70s because the team on the field wasn't doing very well, and this was a chance to bring people to the ballpark, but also to remind them of past glories.
I agree, and I think we've lost a little bit of that, perhaps because there are so many teams now. But there's something lacking with the nostalgia of baseball. I think we've talked about that I've certainly talked about it with other people. And hopefully books like this and Sabre conferences, I'm going to the Cooperstown Symposium next week. Gatherings like that, baseball research journals, they do a lot of good in helping remind us that, hey, this is a business, it's also a game, and it was the national pastime at one point. Joe DiMaggio was the focus of the nation's attention with his hitting streak. That there was no doubt. Just like Ted Williams getting 400, right? There's something that was unifying about baseball, and we're losing that if we haven't lost it already.
Well, you mentioned the Old Timers Day game. My grandfather used to take me every year to the Old Timers Day game at the end of the 50s and early 60s. And you could walk across the field and out the back of the stadium. Bob Costas wrote a great essay somewhere about that I can't find. But going and seeing a game in which Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle and Yogi Berra played, where beforehand they introduced Joe DiMaggio and any of the other great Yankees before, was a way that connected the 56,000 people in that stadium on that day in a way together that I don't see happening much anymore. And I agree with you. The nostalgia of baseball is important. And I think what the book does is great. It reminded me that it's been a long time. Baseball's been going on a long time.
Absolutely. One of my favorite essays in the book is E61, which is about the movie 61, directed by Billy Crystal, about the Mantle-Maris home run chase. They're trying to break Babe Ruth's home run record. And Matt Rothenberg does a masterful job at pointing out the mistakes in the movie. Now, things have to be condensed in a two-hour movie. So certain things are going to be subject to artistic license. He didn't write it to point out all of the mistakes. He wrote it as a companion piece. Hey, wouldn't it be interesting to see what really happened? But the nostalgia of that year, the problems, the controversy, the drama, the impact it had on Maris, read the essay, watch the TV movie, or watch the TV movie and read the essay, and you get a real education for what it was like in the early 60s. And Billy Crystal is probably the most famous Yankees fan in the country. So he was the right person to direct that story. And it's a docudrama for sure, but I think it really captures something there. If you watch that and you don't have a tear in your eye at the end, I really don't know what to tell you.
Well, David, thank you so very much for being here today. It's a wonderful collection. We're always looking for your next book because they all seem to be written especially for downtown and our audience. And whatever you're working on next, I wish you the best.
Well, thank you. Two books hopefully coming out next year, one about 1978, and the other is a biography of Bo Bilinski, who
was
a colorful ball player, probably more famous for the actresses whom he dated and his achievements on the
field. Then his no-hitter, yes.
His no-hitter as a rookie, but kind of a sad story, cautionary tale, and 78, of course, the Bucky Dent home run.
One of the greatest moments in baseball history.
Baseball besides that, no-hitter, Pete Rose's hitting streak, Pete Rose going to Philadelphia after the season, Sparky Lyle leaving the Yankees. Ron Guidry, 25-3. There's a lot of history besides the Yankees Red Sox rivalry that season. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about it next year when it comes out.
Excellent. Though I'll read that chapter very quickly and move on to the other things.
I'll read it twice.
I'll have to read it at all.
David, thank you so much as always. Great to talk with you again, and we wish you continued success.
Likewise. Take care. Bye.
That is David Krell. The book is The New York Yankees in Popular Culture.